The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Americans are dreamers too. This was one of the best speeches I have heard a president give in a long, long time. Americans are dreamers too. One of the great lines and great moments from last night's State of the Union speech. I believe this is the best and most powerful night of President Trump's political career. Last night, he's the president that people have been waiting for. And it was a bipartisan speech. It's not every day that a political event can move you to tears, and I absolutely hate. And you know what? We have little Sally Muckafudge sitting up there, and she did this, and yay. Last night had powerful moment after powerful moment after powerful moment. Three times last night, rather than going to hellfire and brimstone, you know, and following the path of Steve Bannon, the president breathed humanity into our political issues through three powerful stories. A family that had lost two daughters to the MS-13 gang violence. They stood while the president was telling their story, and you could feel their pain. The parents of Otto Warmbier, the guy that was taken in North Korea and brutally, brutally beaten. Those parents stood sobbing while the entire building erupted in applause. And a North Korean defector stood and triumphantly raised his crutches as the emotion swelled. Last night was powerful. Maybe the most effective thing to happen for Republicans. And it didn't have anything to do with what the president said. Was what the Democrats did. The Democrats, this was not just a good night for the president. And I believe a good night for the country. This was a really bad night for the Democrats. Did they not know that the entire country was watching them as they sat and refused to applaud even the entrance of Melania Trump and applaud the things that 99% of the country can rally behind? Nancy Pelosi, I don't know if she swallowed a tooth or what was going on, but my gosh, she wasn't happy. The scowl was so intense. I was afraid she was going to sprain her face. I really did. Wow. They frowned. They sat on their hands for things that I just don't understand. How do you not stand for bonuses and rising wages for the first time for the middle and lower class? Bonuses for employees. They sat and scowled as everyone else stood for In God We Trust, the national anthem, Jerusalem, higher wages. They sat. It was unbelievable. The Congressional Black Caucus remained seated when it was announced that the African-American unemployment number is at its lowest in history. And these people sat and did nothing. I mean, it seems like a big deal. Seems like something you'd be happy about. Many American Democrats care deeply about immigration issues. Trump did something that no Republican or no conservative could ever survive. He locked himself into the death chamber, strapped himself to a conservative electric chair, and turned on the juice. He offered amnesty for 1.8 million illegal aliens. He stated in the speech that triples what Obama was offering. So what happened? The Democrats sat on their hands. This wasn't a big win. This wasn't a big outreach. Nancy Pelosi, I was now afraid it wasn't going to be a sprain. She was going to break her face. At one point, Luis Gutierrez stood up and stormed out of the room. I think it's because people were chanting USA, USA, and that offended him. A congressman is offended by USA, USA. I don't know if they had to have special classes for the Democrats, some sort of a hold me tank, because the flag was behind the president the whole time. They seem to not really, they need to be coddled a little bit. Here's the truth. The Democrats aren't happy with Trump's amnesty because they're not the ones delivering it. They don't care about these people. They care about the votes. They care about the divisiveness of the issue. And I'm not just making this about Democrats. There's many Republicans that do exactly the same thing. They need this to be a political football. They're concerned mainly about protecting their political racket. Both sides do this, but last night I couldn't believe it. If there was ever an opportunity to at least appear to be bipartisan, last night was it. Wittingly or not, the Democrats showed the country who they really are, and it is going to hurt them in the heartland. So, Democrats, by all means, keep sitting down.
It's Wednesday, January 31st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I have to tell you, I do not like the State of the Union. I hate them. I find them a colossal waste of time. I cannot remember the last one that I watched all the way through that I wasn't paid to sit there and watch. I don't even know. I think the last one we did on television, I think I may have left early. And I was being paid to sit there. I just can't take them. I hate all of the trappings. I hate all of it. And this one had all of the trappings that I hate. You know, the long applause lines. Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States, 5 minutes of applause. Then the Speaker stands up. I'm proud to announce the President of the United States, 5 minutes of applause. I got it. Let the guy talk. I hate long speeches. I really, really have a hard time with speeches read on a teleprompter by somebody who can't read on a teleprompter. With all of that being said, that was one of the best speeches I have seen a president give in a long time. He was the best I've ever seen him. He actually connected with much of what he was talking about emotionally, which I don't think I've ever seen before. It was one of the best written speeches I have seen in a long time. And it was true. It was true. It was true to the American values. And I say that with a little bit of blindness today from staring directly into the... How much did he recommend we spend?
Looks like about...
don't look directly at it.
$2.7 trillion
yeah, you
in
might
new
go
spending?
Blind. $2.7 trillion. And amnesty. Amnesty.
The citizenship, too, which is further than... that. This is beyond the DACA debate now. Yeah. We're at amnesty.
We're at amnesty and path to citizenship. And the Democrats didn't respond. Oh, no, they did respond. They did respond.
Negatively, somehow.
Negatively.
They're getting more than they've ever had from anyone, including McCain and Graham and Jeb Bush and all of those people.
And I'm gonna take on the big pharmaceutical companies and make drugs cheaper in the United States. Nothing. Something that's conservative. Nothing.
No, they don't care.
Nothing.
I mean, they're never going to get it. And that's of course,
unbelievable.
Part of the ridiculousness of the event as a whole. But again, you can't imagine that going better for Donald Trump than it did.
I have to tell you, there were times that this is the first time that I have seen anger, outrage on a mass scale. I mean, with Obama, there were a lot of people that were really, you lie. There were people that were really upset, but not like this. Not like this. I have not. When did you? Have you ever heard of a congressman walking out of the speech?
I don't think I have.
I've never heard of that. I don't know what happened to the Congressional Black Caucus, but holy cow! I mean, their reaction was almost like you were sitting with, you know, the Black Panthers. I mean, they were pissed. They were pissed, and it didn't matter. How do you not stand for? I don't care who did it. I don't even give the entirety of this economy at this point. Donald Trump, do not base your success on the stock market. Please do not base your success.
No president can control that.
I know that. And when it goes bad, if you have spent your whole first year and a half saying, look at the stock market, when it collapses, you're in trouble. Don't do that.
Right.
There's a lot of things that he did that have created jobs. And it's not bogus jobs. It's not like, and we're going to build a bridge. Well, that's not a real job. That's a job for right now until the bridge is done. Once the government money dries up, it's over. A real job is a third party that is actually a business that is building and making something of value that will go on for a long time. That's a real job. The other is like a part-time job. It's a temporary job. This guy created jobs. The unemployment rate for African Americans is now at its lowest point in recorded history.
You got to clap for that.
How do you not clap for that?
I mean, I don't care who you are. Like, I think you can. Many of the organizations have made these points that this recovery started before Trump was president and blah, 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 blah. You can use that if you want. You can make it so it's about your guy more than the other guy. But how do you not clap for the fact that this has happened? And it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing, no matter who's responsible for it. You can go on TV and you can make your arguments about how this is actually Obama's doing if you want. But how do you not say in the end that the result is a positive? It's a positive. It's the best it's ever been. And you're sitting on your hands because you don't like the president. That's a bad look. It's really a bad look.
Really, you know? Bad. Really bad.
So, I mean, I think...
And I think it. They looked like extremists last night. They really did. Trump, please, Mr. President, please don't tweet for a few days. Please.
So, yeah.
Lose the phone. Somebody turn the electricity off in the White House. Don't let him charge his phone. Please don't tweet. This was so good last night. Please leave it alone. And this is very uniting.
People get so sensitive whenever there's a word of criticism of Donald Trump. And I just don't, you know, that's not how I.
He doesn't need you to.
He doesn't need you to.
I mean, they used to call Ronald Reagan the Teflon president.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants. He doesn't need your help to defend him.
Nothing.
It's okay. He can.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy. Absolutely. But. It's interesting in that, like, one of the criticisms of Trump is that, okay, he's got policies. Some of them are really good and some of them conservatives really like. And I think America wants to like Donald Trump. There's something about him that America wants to like in that he's a businessman. He kind of speaks, you know, a little bit more in a way that people are familiar with talking to their friends. Like, there's something about that they like.
And the fact that they want to like him because... You know, look at what's happened to the economy. Look what's happened with ISIS. There's a lot of good things that have happened. And Americans don't want to dislike their president. They don't.
I think that's true. So the issue is if he's like that president last night doesn't have a 37% approval rating.
That president, again,
with the same policies, the same person. But he acts like that all the time.
That
guy has a 55% approval rating.
He may, in a year from now, if things would continue to be to grow and be good like it is now, he could have a 60%, 70% approval rating.
Again, like, so there's a lot there to be positive about. And I've made this point before, and I think it's important. If he stopped the tweeting, 0% of his base would go away. The only thing you'd have is upside of people who don't like that stuff. And I use tweeting as a more generality of, I mean, there's no problem with him actually using Twitter. It's just a matter of the outliers, right? Like the things that he gets that create the controversies. His all the 38%, they're all staying if he stops doing that. They all like him for all these, for a million reasons. And he's done a relatively good job with the economy, with ISIS for sure. There's like a lot of things you can praise. It just, you wonder why he doesn't learn, because every time he does this, and he did it last year too. He had a good speech in the State of the Union slot last year too. And 2 days later, it was over. And, you know, I think if he keeps this vibe going, the 2018 election, 2020 is going to be easy.
It's easy.
It's just a matter of maintaining it. It's being consistent.
I know.
And I don't know that he could do that.
If he has the discipline to do what he did last night, and last night it...
Huge win for him.
Yes.
Huge win. Did you see the polling on it?
No.
75% of people who watched the speech approved of it, including 43% of Democrats.
Look, and I like this about people. I don't want to agree with somebody I listen to, or I don't think that's reasonable. There's something wrong if I am agreeing with somebody all the time on everything, and they never surprise me. You're like, oh, wow, I never looked at it that way. You're right or you're wrong, but that's really an interesting take and consistent with you. I like that, okay? I like the fact that we have a president that could make me feel good and the other side feel good. And I don't mean the Marxist side, you know, just the average Democrat feel good.
And
I want that. Yeah. Right. We never got that from Obama. Obama never threw us a bone, ever. It was all about get in the back seat. You've been driving. We're not going to let you drive. We're not going to let you have much to say. You've been saying stuff for a while and you got us in the ditch. It was abusive the way this president treated or the way the last president treated the half of the country. It was abusive. Last night, this president did something I've never seen before. He should have. Now, because he's the amazing Donald Trump that doesn't ever seem to piss anybody off on his own side, he offered things to the Democrats no conservative would ever offer.
Amazing.
Amazing. And because he's Donald Trump, you could actually get the conservatives to go along with it. And the Democrats don't want to do it?
Thank God they still complain and push back, because that's the best chance for him to say no.
Holy cow. Remarkable. Remarkable. Today is a day, for those of you who keep track, I want to say, I never thought this president could do what he did last night. He did it, and it was great. All right, Simply Safe, the home security company that when I started with them, I don't know how many years ago, they only had 10 employees, and it was this idea that they could change the way security was done. Now they are the fastest growing home security company in the nation. They protect over 2 million homes. And I have to tell you, they have just done it again. They have released a brand new security system, completely rebuilt and redesigned. They have added all kinds of new security features and safeguards, power outages, down Wi-Fi, cut landlines. Somebody comes in and, you know, just beats it with a hammer. They've done everything to this to make sure that message still gets out. There's trouble. They've also made the security so small, it's practically invisible. You're not going to really notice it. The intruders aren't going to notice it until they try to open something that they shouldn't, like a window or a door. And the best thing is they've done all of this, I mean, years of research, and you get it for the same great price. It's an honest, fair value. And 24/7 protection is $15 a month. No contract. Smarter. Smaller. Faster, stronger. It's like the Bionic Man that costs $6 million. This price is absolutely unbelievable. The system is the best they've ever built, and there's no strings or wires attached. Supply is limited. Go to simplysafebeck.com right now. See the new system and order simplysafebeck.com. Protect your home and your family the smart way. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Do you think last night that there was Steve Bannon sitting someplace in an almost empty kind of, you know, sleazy bar?
So far, yes. I think the answer is yes.
With a bottle of whiskey, half drunk. just looking up at the TV going, what the hell is it? You need me. Last night, it was everything that the Steve Bannon speech, wasn't. It didn't have any of the creepy, you know, kind of stuff that Steve Bannon was pushing for in all of the speeches. And this is what happens when you don't try to go to the alt-right. What happens when you just say, look, these are principles. We did these things. Here's how they worked out. And now let's be uniting. Holy cow, that was definitely not Bannon, that part. We'll get to that next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So in the bar of my mind, and believe me, there's always a bar in my mind. In the bar room of my mind last night, there were only two customers, and they were sitting on opposite ends of the bar. One end of the bar was Steve Bannon, watching this unbelievable performance of the president last night, going, I could have been somebody. What happened? He's got a half-drunk bottle of whiskey in front of him. And he's just replaying every moment of the last year in his head. The far end of the bar, on the other end, is another man with a half-drunk bottle of Zima. And it's Barack Obama going, Guantanamo Bay, the rules of engagement are completely reversed. And all of these things, I thought for sure an executive order was the law.
He thought he'd be president forever.
Yeah.
And no.
If you look at many of his great accomplishments were all through executive order. They've been reversed.
And there are air quotes around great accomplishments, by the way.
Yeah, I know. but let me just say this. Republicans, President, Mr. President, please learn this lesson. You cannot rule through edict. The next president that comes in is just going to reverse your stuff. It's got to be passed. It's got to go through Congress, because then you don't change it. Yeah. And that is the tax reform. You know, that's not an edict. But just a lot of the things that he has done have been, you know, presidential edicts. Those change.
Yeah, he's been the best part of his presidency has been his executive policy.
Yes.
Which is great, except for the fact that the next guy can reverse it. Next Congress can reverse the law, too. However, much more difficult to accomplish.
I believe he's also appointed more federal judges and district judges than any other president in history.
Right. And that's, you know,
that's lasting.
Many of his appointments. I mean, it's funny because, you know, over the time where he was from a candidate to president, there's been obviously different aspects that I've had a problem with of his presidency and of his run. But a lot of that was tied to Steve Bannon, though. I mean, the Bannon elements of this presidency have always been very disturbing to me. And he's gone. You know, Flynn's gone. A lot of the guys that we were talking about thinking there were their worst appointments were gone. I love Scott Pruitt. I love Mick Mulvaney.
I
love Mattis. Kelly.
How is Mick Mulvaney dealing with a $1.7 trillion stimulus package?
Yeah, and that was that's part of the spending. I mean, again, I think you go through the first part of this is looking at that speech and saying, how was it? You know what I mean? Like, look at it as a moment in time. How was it? And I don't think you could possibly expect that to go better than it did. It was interesting because you watched it. I listened to it. And as someone who just listened to it and didn't see the visuals.
Nixon won.
Nixon did win. I thought it was really well done. He seemingly, that Trump, I think, is the better. It's a little bit boring. You tweeted about this a little bit last night. You know, he's not like saying the wild things. It's not necessarily as fun, but it is. It's a little bit more boring presidential, but that's good, I think,
that's
for
good,
Trump.
Yeah.
He's better.
No, I was conflicted all night. All night. It was like, I should say at the very beginning of the speech, when he first started in and everything, and he was on teleprompter, you know, kind of doing that. He was almost like delivering it at the beginning, like Clint Eastwood with a squinty eye. And you're like, what is happening here? When he's on teleprompter and the speech is, you know, just a usual speech, It's boring. You want him off the teleprompter because then it's at least entertaining. However, this speech was so well written. I lasted the entire speech. I watched every word of this speech. I can't remember the last time I did that.
But if you kind of break it, the speech into three types of content, right? There's one, Trump essentially taking credit for the good things he's done, right? Every president does this. You brag about the stuff you've done. Every single president does it every time. That's part one. Part two, let me show you, let me give you that color of it, right? Here is this person who had this happen to them. Here's this person who escaped North Korea. Here's this person whose child was tragically murdered. Here's this person who got a new job and is now a welder. All those things, kind of that, the color of the event. Here's an illustration of the things I believe are important. And then the third would be new policy proposals. What are the things he wants to do in the future? Which is the part of this, by the way, that is required by the Constitution, right? The State of the Union says from time to time, we'll give updates on things that they believe are going to be priorities. What is the state of we're doing and what should we do in the future? So if you break that up into the three parts, the first two parts were home runs. Him talking about the things that he has done, I thought he was great on that and didn't do the typical real over-exaggeration of it. There were a couple claims that you could have problems with, but generally speaking...
Yeah, like biggest tax cut in history. It wasn't the biggest tax cut.
They believe it's the 12th biggest tax cut in history.
But it was still
good. A tax cut.
Why do that? I have the biggest crowd ever. No, stop it. It's fine. Everything was fine.
Right.
This was really good.
He didn't do much of that, though.
Yeah,
you know, like a lot of the stuff was like, you know, people were saying, well, we've had great job creation. And they have had great job creation. And people will point out, well, the last 5 years of Obama had higher numbers, which is true technically, but each job to add to the economy as you get closer to full employment is more difficult. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a real argument to be made that, you know, his economic accomplishments have been really good. The tax, the stock market being high, well, it's risky to stake your entire claim on that, which I don't think he did, but I mean, that can be problematic long-term. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's true. It is at the highest it's been, right? So him taking credit for the stuff he's done, I thought worked out really well. His illustration, where he's taking people from the crowd and pointing out what they've done. Usually I hate those things always because they're very pandering and stuff. I thought he did a great job with that. It's probably one of the best I've ever seen.
You need to, listen to it. You need to watch those scenes.
Yeah.
They were so powerful. They were so powerful. Mm.
He did a great job with those.
The people, Warmbier's family, even the guy from North Korea when he stood up with the crutches, and the two families that lost their daughters to MS-13, the pain on their faces was heart-wrenching. It was just, it was a masterpiece of emotion. It really was.
And that's important. It's one of those two things are the reason why, I believe, he had 75% approval of the speech. I think it was 97% among Republicans and 43% of Democrats, which is insanely high, especially for a guy who is, as generally speaking, as divisive as Trump is. I mean, you know, if you like him, you love him. And if you don't like him, you really don't like him. So Democrats don't usually cheer anything that he's done. So the connecting with the emotion, giving a positive picture of America, absolute home runs. The policy prescriptions are important. And we can, I think, lose sight of the fact that he made a lot of proposals last night. Some of them were good. But I mean, let me give you four quick things from that speech last night. One, $1.5 trillion in infrastructure spending.
Crazy.
Now, remember, this is now literally double what Obama wanted for infrastructure spending.
And got.
And we complained about like crazy. He's now doubled it. And he said, by the way, we should point out, not $1.5 trillion, but at least, was his quote, at least $1.5 trillion in infrastructure spending. That is a big freaking deal. And we can't ignore it as conservatives. As you pointed out, I don't know how Mick Mulvaney gets through it having to pitch for that proposal because he was one of the biggest voices against that sort of spending under Obama. I know, he's not the president. He's got to support the policies of his boss, and I understand that. But that's got to be difficult for him because he is a real budget hawk. So that's one, $1.5 trillion. The Family Leave Act. He again wants to bring free paid family leave to there's several proposals here. But it's talking, you're talking about people, you know, maternity leave and leave for sickness and all of these other things. They're all really good policies, cost a fortune. The estimates are up to $700 billion for these programs. Again, stimulus was $787 billion. So this is another, it depends on what parts of that he enacts, but the cost is usually between $100 billion and $700 billion. So we don't know the exact cost of that because he could trim it.
We're up to $2 trillion, yeah, maybe two to 2.2,
give or take. And then another $500 billion of ending a sequester, which he made a big point of. That gets you to about $2.7 trillion. And that gives you no economic impact whatsoever. I'm not factoring in any cost at all to giving citizenship to 2 million illegal immigrants. So I'm saying no cost to that at all. And we're at well over $2 trillion, maybe as high as 2.7. And that is with him giving his low estimate, because he said at least $1.5 trillion in infrastructure. So it could be even more than that. We've heard estimates at least as high as $1.7 trillion for that. So, you know, you have to step back from, I liked the speech. I thought it was great. It was as good as I could possibly ever imagine a Donald Trump speech going.
I couldn't even imagine that.
It was overwhelmingly well received by the American people. Our job, as I think conservatives, is to say to Donald Trump, hey, look, you know, this part's great, this part's great, this part's great. Spending another $3 trillion is not an ideal path.
Beyond not an ideal path.
I don't think it's a sustainable path.
So it's interesting. You said the three areas of his speech were what?
Were bragging, which, by the way, I think that is 100%. It's not a Trump thing. That is every president takes time to say, this is what we've accomplished in the last year. It has to be part of that speech. So that, I call it bragging, but that's part one, bragging.
Yeah, got it.
Part two, the color, the emotional way of illustrating these stories, bringing out people from North Korea, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then third, policy prescriptions. Where are we going forward?
So here's what I thought it was in three parts too. And I wrote them down when you said yours. I wrote my three parts and I thought we were going to agree and we didn't. Part one, who we are. He didn't really brag about all of his. He wasn't saying I was making America great. He said the American people have been unleashed.
Yeah.
And they made America great. And here are some of the stories that have happened. OK, so the first part, I think, was the color and who we are. Mm-hmm. This is who we are.
Yeah,
statement of we believe in God. We believe in the flag. We have these principles, who we are.
I'd put that in the color category.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm combining those and making that who we are. The second one is surprise. Look what I'm willing to give you to the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise. Because he kept looking over. You didn't see this, but he kept looking over to the Democrats and like, what are you not? How are you not applauding on that? How? How? I mean, it was amazing.
That's great.
And it was genuine. He was genuinely shocked. What? We're talking prescription drugs here. And you're sitting on your hands. So surprise. Here's what I'm willing to give you is part two. And the third part that we haven't talked about, and I'm going to spend some time on tonight, is war.
Mm.
I don't know if anybody else felt this, and it may just be because I remember the Cold War, and I remember the Evil Empire speech. I remember what it felt like, the buildup to a war like that war. I said to my daughter yesterday, she was sitting there, and I said, oh, good God, this feels like we're going to war. And she said, Dad, we're already at war. And I said, not like that. This war is different. And we're going to explain that tonight. But there was a definite undertow there that I'm hoping is all posturing. But it was concerning last night. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And I'm going to go zero in on two of those stories that he told last night that were stories that every American should hear. They were so powerful. The two girls that were lost by MS-13, our research team has been looking into that and finding that story and all the details. We're going to tell a couple of those stories that he told last night that are really powerful. That for some reason, the Democratic leadership did not connect with. And unfortunately for them, almost 50% of their base did connect with it. And that's going to be bad for them. because you had a really good Trump last night and a really good here's who we are message. We're going to cover all that tonight at 5 o'clock only on theblaze.com/TV. If you're not a subscriber, make sure you join us now. Going to be a great show tonight. All right, I'll tell you about Blinds.com. Actually, let me have Mark from Arizona tell you about Blinds.com. He wrote in, heard about Blinds.com on the Glenn Beck program, had faith in his suggestion. They had amazing service, quick delivery, installation was a breeze. The blinds look fantastic. I ordered more 2 weeks later, and I feel exactly the same way. I'm telling all of my friends. Try this out for yourself. This is the reason why Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of window coverings is because they have made it so easy. Their customer service is great, and their products are great, and their prices are unbelievable. You're going to get free samples. You're going to get free shipping. You can get a free design consultation if you want it. They will guide you through the installation step by step. It's really simple. Find out today why over 20 million Americans have stopped saying, "Is there a guy with an apron here that knows anything about this?" And have gone to Blinds.com, making them the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Now through February 15th, you'll save 20%. Now through February 15th, 20% site-wide at Blinds.com/talk, T-A-L-K, Blinds.com/talk. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We are going to spend a full hour with Jordan Peterson coming up in just a few minutes. Jordan Peterson is this amazing professor from Canada. So well-spoken, so clear on what is right and wrong. Not a bomb thrower. The great thing is he's Canadian. I've not heard him talk about politics. And he's talking about the rules for life. There are simple rules for life. He says there's 12 of them. He's got a new book out, The 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. Maybe I like him so much because we think so much alike. If you don't know who he is, you're going to love him. If you do know who he is, a full hour with him. Jordan Peterson, next.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
I got a quick general tip for life. I think it's universal. Don't make a list of Jewish enemies. Or any other list of enemies based on, you know, ethnic background. Just a bad idea. Never really works out well. Yesterday, former congressional candidate Paul Nehlen, the guy who lost overwhelmingly to Paul Ryan in the 2016 Wisconsin Republican primary, blamed Jews for attacking his America First positions. He used Twitter to post a spreadsheet of the names, including, you know, whether the person is a Jew or not. Really, very, no, it's classy. He claims to have received 81 personal attacks on Twitter in the last month. Wow, only 81? I mean, whoa. Of those 81 Twitter attackers, he said 74 are Jewish, which can only mean one thing. You know, of course, say it with me, a vast Jewish conspiracy.
Conspiracy.
Right, to ruin the popularity that Nehlen thinks he has. It could also be that Nehlen just hates Jews. By the way, his research pretty much sucks. As it turns out, several people on his list weren't actually Jewish, which, who would have thunk it? You know, maybe Mr. Nehlen hasn't gotten the calipers out and measured people's heads. Mm. So that could be. He also posted charts with photos of people who work at CNN, NBC, New York Times, NPR, Fox News, complete with Stars of David on their photo to point out the Jews. He said that Twitter made him delete those photos. He's trying to portray himself as a victim of censorship and oppression. Look, I believe in the freedom of speech. You could say what you want. Even this kind of speech is abhorrent. There's always been people like Nehlen, and there always will be. The difference now is they have this megaphone of social media. So the question is, why engage with a guy like this? He's spewing hate. People, you know, just can't take it. They want to fight back. But you're never going to win the argument. You're not going to change his mind. Pointing out that he sounds, you know, kind of like a 1930s Nazi isn't going to suddenly make Nehlen say, well, you know what? I kind of do sound like a Nazi. Oh, I didn't even know about that. I should reevaluate my belief in Jews. This guy's a flame out. He's a flame out politician. He is grasping for anything to help him keep afloat as he aims for Ryan's House seat again this year. You have to keep an eye on people like this, especially when organizations like Breitbart gave him his own column for a while. Don't help him trend on Twitter. He's a former darling of Steve Bannon and Breitbart. He is part of the whole psycho alt-right white nationalist fringe that guys like Bannon have been trying to bring under the wing of the Republican Party. These guys are crackpots. They're dangerous. But the left would love America to think that those crackpots are part of mainstream conservative thought. They're not. Conservatives and Republicans, you can't run fast enough from people like Paul Nehlen and the alt-right.
It's Wednesday, January 31st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You've been listening to this program about, I think, maybe 2005, 2006. I started doing my research on the 12th Imam, which is this crazy end of times theology of some people who live in the Middle East, specifically Iran. And it's scary. They're very dangerous. As I did my research on it, the goal to hasten the return of the Promised One is to wash the world in blood and create chaos. And I said in 2006, and I've been saying it ever since, run from chaos. Put order in your life. The world is going to start moving towards chaos. This is what Russia and Alexander Dugin is also pushing, is his chaos theory. Chaos is the work of darkness. For I don't know how long, people have been saying, you've got to get Jordan Peterson on. He's the greatest guy in the history of the world. And we're like, okay, we'll get to him. Then finally, we sat down and we watched him, and we understand why everybody was saying, you've got to have him on. He's just written a new book, The 12 Rules of Life, An Antidote to Chaos. Welcome to the program, Jordan Peterson. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. If I may describe your book this way, tell me if I'm wrong. People right now feel this chaos and they feel they're overwhelmed and they feel like everything they do or have done doesn't make any difference. And so they're starting to unplug and they're starting to throw up their hands and get frustrated and angry. You are saying that no. Forget about the big picture. Do these 12 little, pretty simple things and you'll change the world, at least change your life.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to start, and you won't do any harm either. So, you know, first do no harm,
right,
as the physicians have it.
So, first of all, let me just give the, have you give your credentials. You are a clinical psychologist and a professor of psychology, and you have really been found in kind of a worldwide sensation on YouTube. And you're really,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh no, that's so far you've got it right. Yeah. I've been a practicing clinical psychologist for about 20 years. I've spent tens of thousands of hours talking to people about their deepest problems. And I've worked as a business consultant and I've helped entrepreneurs. I've helped companies find entrepreneurs to help run them. And, I've done all sorts of things.
I want to go through the book, and we have some time with you today. So I want to go through the book. We can't go through all 12, but I'm just going to give you the advice, and then you tell me exactly what it means and how to apply it. Rule number two, treat yourself like someone you're responsible for helping.
Yeah, well, people are hard on themselves. You know, everybody's aware of their own flaws and faults and inadequacies and failures to live up to even their own ideals. And we're also painfully aware that we do things purposefully wrong from time to time, just out of spite and a desire to produce misery. And because of that, we don't feel as positively predisposed towards ourselves as we might. And so we don't take care of ourselves very well. And it's deeper than that. Even we kind of have contempt for ourselves because we're fragile and mortal and subject to the tragic conditions of life. And we're not exactly sure, I would say, that we deserve the best or that we deserve to be taken care of properly. People will often treat their animals better than they treat themselves. And that's not good. It's not good. You have to detach yourself from yourself a little bit and understand that you deserve to be cared for, like at a level of basic decency, just like any other creature, let's say. You should want the best for yourself.
I've always been fascinated by the human race because we really are self-hating egomaniacs. We build ourselves up into these all-powerful, but as individuals, we also have this self-loathing.
People have a hard time of it. You know, I mean, we're the only creatures that are self-conscious and we're aware of the fragility of life and on our own flaws. And so because of that, it's very difficult for us to regard ourselves properly. And so chapter two, rule two, treat yourself as if you're someone that you should take care of, is a description of why it is, a deep description of why it is that people have doubts about their own being, and then also what you should do in the face of that. I mean, the fact that we're faced with our own mortality constantly and with the human proclivity for evil means that we have a very large burden to bear, but we're also capable of doing that. And you should regard yourself positively as someone who's able to face the tragedy and malevolence of existence and still move forward and sometimes move forward with great nobility and grace. I mean, people can operate under horrendous conditions and do so, well, admirably. And that's something really remarkable. And so chapter two, rule two is about asking people to treat themselves with some respect and see what might happen as a consequence.
Do you think that, I just read a study this morning that shows depression rates of teenagers are up, I think 48%, suicide is up 24% since 2010, and the study showed that it coincided with the use of a smartphone, and all of the social media. Do you think this is helping us? Because we're one of your other rules. Let me see which one it is. Here, rule four: compare yourself to who you were yesterday and not who someone else is today. Do you think some of this is coming from we're not good enough because we don't have the life that we think everybody else has based on their bogus Facebook page?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on there. We're undergoing sequential technological revolutions, and it's not easy to keep up. And so I think we don't know what to do with all the magical technological devices that are being thrown our way. It's a very, very steep learning curve. And social media, all the major social media outlets, Twitter and YouTube and Instagram and so forth, they all have their advantages and their pitfalls. They're quite addictive, and they do throw you out into a massive realm and allow you to compare yourself to the Facebook version of everyone else. And that definitely is rough. You pointed out rule four, compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is today. That's a good maxim to live by because no one else is really like you in any deep sense. I mean, obviously people have their similarities, but the conditions of your life truly are unique. And what the way to you need an ideal to pursue, compare myself to other people to establish that ideal, but you don't really. You have to figure out who you are and then try to be better than that. And that's something you can always do too. And one of the things I tried to do in that rule is outline why that's good enough. Like, you can make incremental changes over who you are right now. And those incremental changes will compound and transform you across time. It's a really, really powerful way of looking at the world. and it stops you from being bitter and resentful. I mean, part of the problem is when you look at someone who you think is doing better than you, I mean, look, perhaps they are. We don't want to be naive about it. You don't know everything about their life. You know, if you're admiring a celebrity and you think, well, I'd love to have a life like that, you see the celebrity as a very low-resolution hero. You don't know the details of their life. You have no idea how they're doing across 10 or 11 dimensions of comparison, the dimensions that are important. It's better to think about who you are now, to take stock of your flaws and your virtues, and to move forward from that foundation. That way you can have an ideal. I'm going to be better than I am. And you don't have to be bitter and resentful because you're not who you think someone else is. So,
Professor,
maybe the social media feeds that, you know?
I'm a 22-year recovering alcoholic, and I discovered something about myself that I wonder if it isn't true about most people. When I first started my journey into figuring out really who I was late in life, in my 30s, I stopped, and I really didn't. It wasn't a conscious stop in some ways. And then I was motivated to continue to look deep inside of me, and I realized at that time the reason why I think I was afraid. And I don't know if this transfers to other people, but I was afraid because I was afraid there was nothing really of value inside of me.
Yeah, right. Well, that's it. That is people's deepest fear, is that there's nothing valuable about people. And I truly believe that is deeply, deeply wrong. Like, one of the things I've tried to do in 12 Rules for Life is to take a very stark appraisal of human existence. Like, I do believe that our lives are fundamentally tragic. You know, we grow old, we get sick, we die. We lose the people we love, all of that. We're finite creatures, you know. And there is real malevolence and evil in the world, and not only in the hearts of other people, but definitely in our own hearts. And so the conditions of existence are very dire in some sense, tragedy and evil. But I do believe that there are ways of living in the world that enable us to transcend that, and that the old idea that we each have a light inside of us that, if turned on, will illuminate the world, I believe that to be true. I think that the human spirit is more powerful than death and evil, and that if you live a truthful life, and if you live a life that's oriented towards the highest good, that you can withstand the burden of being, and you can discover within yourself something that's that spark of divinity that unites you with God.
Back with more from Jordan Peterson here in just a moment. He's at Jordan B. Peterson on Twitter. The book is called 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos.
We may have been a little esoteric here. If you don't know who Jordan Peterson is, he is so right in where people live right now. I fear I'm doing him a disservice. He's controversial right now because he's saying the things that we all know are true but have not been said for a long time. What it takes to be a man. And many of his followers on YouTube are young men. They're starving to hear, what does it mean to be a man? More in a second. All right, I want to talk to you about Valentine's Day. This is my least favorite holiday of them all because, it's like New Year's Eve. The pressure is on. And they hate people who say, well, what do you mean the pressure's on? Just let go of the pressure. Shut up. The pressure is on. With Valentine's Day, I'm in this really comfortable space with my wife where it has real meaning. And I can get my wife nothing. God forbid that. I get her a card. And I always get her flowers, and I never really like to send flowers before because they die so fast, especially roses. I'm going to talk to you about our new sponsor, 1-800-Flowers.com. If you are looking for really beautiful bouquets, right now you can get a 12 multicolored roses for only $19.99. You can double it to 24 multicolored roses for only $10 more. This site is absolutely unbelievable because they have more than just the flowers. They have all kinds of gifts. And believe it or not, they have a $10,000 gift package. If that happens to be you, not me, $19.99 or double the roses for another $10 at 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com. You pick the delivery date. Get it done now. February 14th is just around the corner. Order them now. $19.99. A dozen multicolored roses. Upgrade. Double it. Two dozen for $10 more at 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio icon and enter the promo code Beck. 1-800-Flowers.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We covered the presidential speech last hour, and we will continue here in about 34 minutes with some more analysis on what happened in Washington last night. It was absolutely amazing. But we're joined now by Jordan Peterson. He's got a new book that is out today. It's called 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. Jordan, I've been watching you now for a few months, and I saw, you know, something that you just did on the BBC where the presenter was after you from the beginning. There wasn't an honest question, I didn't feel, from the get-go. She was trying. It was almost like every question was like, come on, fight with me. What is it that you're saying that is making so many people just angry? Because I don't see it.
Well, I'm calling out the identity politics types on the left, and in a really blunt way, you know, and so they're not very happy about that.
But you're doing it with facts. You're doing it with ease and gentleness and kindness.
Yeah, that's worse.
I know.
Because, you know, what if the radical leftists have to paint everybody who opposes them as some kind of supervillain, because if they don't, if the person who opposes them isn't unreasonable, then they're reasonable, and that means that reasonable people can critique the radical left. And I am a reasonable person, and that makes me more threatening rather than less. And I mean, I believe that the radical leftists have pretty much destroyed the humanities, and that's a terrible thing because they're at the core of the university. And I also believe, and there was an article in the Boston Globe just this last week making exactly the same case, that the corruption of the humanities is now spreading out into the broader public, into corporations and so forth, often through the back door of human resources. And I'm pointing all this out, the pathological legislation that's been passed in Canada, for example, requiring compelled speech that resulted in the inquisition of a teaching assistant at Wilfrid Laurier University. And yeah, and people aren't very happy with me as a consequence, because I'm describing what's going on and also why it's wrong. It's really wrong for us to degenerate back into tribalism.
So I want to go into that. We have to take a quick break. And I want to go into that, why it's wrong. We are in several tribes, and we're all really doing it. Why is it wrong, and how do we change that in our own life?
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Whether he knows it or not, there is a movement, a global movement that is building underneath Dr. Jordan Peterson. He's Canadian. He is now sweeping the world on YouTube. A lot of young people are really listening to him and following him. And he is articulating universal principles that haven't been articulated this way in a long time. In his new book, 12 Rules for Life, he says things like this: confront the chaos of being, take aim against the sea of troubles, specify your destination and chart your course, admit what you want, tell those around you who you are, narrow and gaze attentively, and move forward forthrightly.
We were talking about before the break something that, and this was a kind of reminded me of a recent article about a sort of an alt-right conspiracy gathering in New York City, and a bunch of reporters went to it, and they started asking, trying to fish around for what their ideology was, and one of them said this: we're not ideological, we're tribal. We don't care about the politics as much as we care about pissing people off and trolling and shaking things up. Doctor, before we went to the break, you mentioned the way we are starting to degenerate into tribalism. I think people now are starting to look at tribalism as a positive. Why isn't it?
Well, people, when they lose their unifying narrative, they degenerate into tribalism. You saw that happening, for example, in Yugoslavia when the wall fell and the Soviet Empire collapsed. People degenerate back into their tribal groups. Now, look, when you move from being a child to being an adult, you have to pass through a period of time where your primary affiliation is to the group. That's what happens when you're a teenager and a young adult. You have to become socialized. You have to take your place as a member of a group. But that isn't where your development should end. You should then transcend the group and become an individual. And then you're part of the force that establishes and renews the group, as well as just being part of the group. And it's that transcendent identity as an individual that enables different groups to live together on the same territory peacefully, because I can come out of my group as a forthright and honest individual, and you can come out of your group the same way, and we can communicate and negotiate, and we can figure out how to cooperate and compete peacefully and to trade and all of that without degenerating into tribal murderousness. Now, what's happening in our culture is that the radical left is attempting to establish a narrative.
And you say this globally. You're not just talking about the United States.
Yes. No. This is happening all over the world, but particularly in the West, and it's everywhere. And the radical left narrative is that there's no superordinate narrative. There's nothing that really unites us. The world is a landscape of competing power interests, and those power interests are...
We lost you. Hang on. Those power interests, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. We just lost you. You said those power interests are...
They're based on ethnicity or race or gender, these essential elements that no one can change, and that the entire world is just a battleground of power between those competing groups, and that some of them oppress the others. The right wing looks at that, the radical right, and says, okay, if the world is nothing but a battleground between power groups, then I'm going to pick my power group, whatever it happens to be, and I'm going to win. Mm. And so they both end up playing this extraordinarily dangerous group identity game. And there's nothing at the end of that except catastrophe.
So can I ask you this question? And I ask you this as a Canadian, because that way you're not getting into politics. As an outsider, we've lost our national identity, and we don't know who we are anymore. As an outsider looking in, what is the identity that all Americans could and should unite around? Who are we?
Well, it's the old American dream. It's that America is a place where people judge on their competence and are able to compete.
Doctor, I don't know if you've moved into another room or something, but we're losing you, and we could barely understand you.
Oh, so let's try this. Is that... I don't know what's wrong with the connection.
Now you're gone again. Can you hear me now? Do you have?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Well.
All right. So go ahead, and I'll tell you if we drop out. Let's try one more time.
So, well, the United States is a beacon to the world, as far as I'm concerned. The pinnacle of the West.
We're gonna have to stop and see if we can get a new connection with you. We're gonna call you right back and see if we can get a new connection. We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And come back with Dr. Jordan Peterson. Canadian phone systems.
Blame the Canadians. Yeah. Typical Glenn. Jordan Peterson is the author of 12 Rules for Life. We're going to have him back in just a second. It's an antidote to chaos, which a clear cell phone connection is also one.
Yeah, a little chaotic.
It's helpful.
All right, you need great talent for your business. You're short on time. You don't want to get lost in a huge stack of resumes or emails to, find the perfect person. You're busy.
But you want an antidote to chaos, don't you? Do you have one?
I do.
Because it does seem like this is the exact point. Yes, please.
You're right. You need smarter tools. You need ZipRecruiter. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the world's leading job boards with a single click. And then ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. This is different. Unlike the other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter just, doesn't depend on the right candidate finding you that day when you need them. It goes out and finds them. That's why 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. You can try and post your jobs for free on ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Do it right now. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Find that person today. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We're talking to Dr. Jordan Peterson from Canada. He is a new favorite of mine and really, I mean, just so clear in his thinking. He has a huge global following that has been building for a while. And a lot of them are young males. And he is not spoon-feeding them stuff, you know, the average person in the media or, you know, in universities would say, you know, oh, that's what they want to hear. And you got to coddle them. He doesn't coddle them. He tells them, grow up, be a man. What does that mean, Jordan, to when you're talking to these guys, what is it they're starving for?
Well, they're starving for the idea that their life has purpose, a recognition of the idea that their life has purpose. And so I tell them, well, there's things to do out there in the world. You know, there's chaos to confront and there's order to establish and revivify and there's suffering to ameliorate and there's evil to constrain. And that the world is a lesser place if you don't take your place in it. And that the consequences of that are dire. You have an important destiny. You know, I tell them that they're made in the image of God, like the old stories say, and that they have something beneficial. God, every time I talk about this, it breaks me up. That they have something beneficial that they have to bring into the world. It's that that stops the world from degenerating into hell. And that it truly is important for you to get out of bed in the morning and to face the world honestly and to set your family straight and to work for your community and to aim at something great in the world. This is vital. Without that, everyone suffers stupidly and miserably. And why bother with that? Like, you can't just hide in the basement and shirk your responsibilities. It makes you miserable and bitter and even murderous. It's not a pathway to take. It's just good to stand up and take on the burden of the world and to pick up your damn cross and walk up the hill. You need to do that. It's important. It truly is important. And that people aren't one dot and one speck among 7 billion. We're all networked together. We're all in this together. And we could do something remarkable together if we aimed high and spoke the truth.
So,
that's
some,
the right way to live.
Some of your prescriptions are pretty tough for this, though. And looking at, you know, Rule 6 is one that pops out to me because this is something I've found over and over again that people absolutely despise doing with themselves, which is set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. That is something that people don't want to do. It's very difficult to do. How do you make them do it?
Well, I think what you do is what I tried to do in that chapter is about kids who shot up the Columbine High School and about a mass murderer named Carl Panzram. And I try to describe in detail the motivations for doing such things. And people who do such things have very powerful motivations for doing them. They're very angry about the conditions of existence, the tragedy that constitutes existence, and they get bitter and resentful, and then they want revenge, and they're willing to take it. Well, they're willing to take revenge on the most innocent. I mean, that's what the guy who shot up the school in Connecticut did. He went and shot kids. Like, well, how the hell do you get into a situation like that? And you brood on the horrors of existence. And you get resentful for your part in the tragedy. And there's no excuse for that. I mean, life is very, very difficult. There's no doubt about that. And unfair things happen. But to retreat and to become resentful and bitter is only to multiply the problem. And so Chapter 6 is an injunction. It's an anti-activist injunction, I would say, to some degree. Like, for the last 50 years, we've encouraged young people to go out there and stop the people who are doing bad things from doing them. And I just think that's a counterproductive way of living in the world. It's like, you should stop the bad things that you're doing, and you should straighten up your life, and then you should straighten up your family's life, and then your community's life, and then everything will be straight and proper, and that's all to the good. Then maybe we won't degenerate back into that brutal tribalism that characterized the 21st century and wipe ourselves out.
So I'm sitting here. I have found these things myself over the last few years, and to be true. And people will say, "Well, you can't surrender and retreat, and you can't just let it go by." And you're like, "No, I'm not letting it go by. I'm not surrendering. I'm just not playing that game because it gets us nowhere. And I can make an impact in my own home and in my own life, and that changes things."
It's not trivial either. Like, you know, it's not that easy to set your family in order. And if you do that, you'll learn something deep. You know, if you can make peace with your brothers and your sisters, and if you can make peace with your parents and your past, and you can make your own house peaceful and productive, then you've learned some deep psychological and practical truths. And then when you go out into the world and attempt to do things, you're going to be first on a very solid footing, because you'll have lots of support, and you won't be tortured by a never-ending stream of domestic hell and idiocy. And you'll be ready to do things in the world that are appropriate and proper. You'll have practice.
It's
not like setting your house in order is trivial. It's very difficult.
You admit that there is evil in the world, and it is profound. And
well,
I think
that's one of the most self-evident things about the world.
I know. and people will hear this, and because I've heard this from people, Glenn, there's evil, and it has to be stopped. Yes, it does. And you're just a retreat from evil, because that's just not going to stop. Can you connect the dot to the chaos in our own life, and then the evil that is out?
Look to yourself first. That's the thing, is that the best place to begin the process of constraining evil is in your own heart. Like, you know, I've studied totalitarian brutality for 30 years, and one of the things that I've taught my students, well, since the early 1990s, is that if each of them was placed in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, there's an overwhelming probability that they would be Nazis. Mm. Like, everybody thinks, no, I'd be Schindler rescuing the Jews. Right. I'd be the Dutch family that hid Anne Frank. It's like, no, you wouldn't.
No.
That's not true. You'd be on the side of the majority, just like you are now, in all probability. And if the temptation was put in front of you to do the terrible things that were offered to the people who did the terrible things the Nazis and the communists did, then it's really probable that you would do those. And it's also really probable that you're doing such things already on a smaller scale. You're torturing the people that you love. You're betraying your friends. You're not working up to your potential at work. There's all sorts of things that you're doing in your life that are small examples of the things that get out of control in tyrannical societies. Lots of people are tyrants in their own little domain, or they're tyrants to themselves.
I'm sure that
that needs to be stopped.
I'm sure that you have read the book Ordinary Men, on how men,
yes.
Yeah, in Poland, were they did with compassion at first, and they turned into monsters. It's a slow, gradual thing that you just don't see.
Oh, that's a great and terrible book, Ordinary Men. Yeah, it's one of the ones that's, I have a reading list on my website, and that's one of the books that's on the reading list, because that is a great example of how you move to perdition one step at a time, and how perfectly ordinary people can be trained, even against their own will in some sense, against their own better instincts, to become, well, committers of atrocity.
We have
I read history. I don't read it as an innocent bystander. I read history as a perpetrator. And that's the right way to read history.
We have a list of books to read as well, and it's quite long, but move this to the top of your list. 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. Move this up on your list of things to do or watch. Jordan Peterson on YouTube. He is so well spoken, so well thought out, and a voice of common sense that you just don't hear very often anymore. Dr. Peterson, thank you so much. Appreciate it, and we'll talk again. God bless.
Thanks very much for the invitation. It was good talking with you.
Good talking to you. Jordan Peterson again, the name of the book, 12 Rules for Life. All right, we go back to the Capitol and the president's speech last night. Next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
White, wealthy, and privileged. Oh my gosh, run! Last night, the Democrats chose somebody to deliver the Democratic response that really kind of shows how out of touch they really are. If you're going after white, wealthy, and privileged, you don't pick a Kennedy to deliver the message. Democrats continue to claim that they are the party of diversity and the poor, but last night, the grandson of Robert Kennedy was handpicked, of course, by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, two white, wealthy, and privileged people desperately clinging to the glory days of the Democratic Party. So blinded by their perception of the past that they refuse to address the Kennedy family history. Which, just I would like to point out, does include a history of deception, infidelity, sexual misconduct, oh, and murder. Leaving a woman on the floorboard of a car, you know, to die because you didn't want to get caught having sex with her. And just, I mean, me too. Hashtag me too. Good heavens. How do you put a Kennedy on the pedestal during the Me Too movement? Does nobody remember this? Does anyone remember he left her to die to cover it all up? That's what happened. And his family helped him cover it up. Mary Jo Kopechne was the former secretary of Joe Kennedy's grandfather. Let me say that again. The secretary of the guy last night that they picked, the secretary of the grandfather, Mary Jo Kopechne was the secretary of the grandfather that they had on last night. That's nuts. And it's not like after that, the Kennedys like went, oh, you know what? Boy, we've been a bad family. Maybe we should clean up our act. They continue. Democrats, if I may quote Nancy Pelosi, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself. It was so much cooler when she said it. If Trump's election didn't send a clear message that the American people are done with political dynasties, I don't know what will. Nancy, Chuck, there's so much here to learn from, but one is stop digging up the Kennedys.
It's Wednesday, January 31st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So we assign this out. We assign this out. We assign the...
full disclosure here.
Yeah, to watch Joe Kennedy last night. Did you notice, something wrong with his... Maybe it was just the way the lights were on him. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Joe Kennedy last night delivered the address, and I don't think anybody was watching by that time. And here to talk about it, the man we assigned, is Jeff Fisher. Hello, Jeffy. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And, you know, hey, this country, from textiles to robots, is a place that knows how to make great things. I mean, he told us that. And, you know, we believe that.
It's amazing to have someone actually watch to watch this and not have to actually deal with viewing it myself, because I did not want to hear any of the content of it, but I kind of figured it would be like, oh, textiles.
I'm kind of disappointed because of, you know, because it was, you know, Kennedy, and I mean, was he at least any good at it, Jeffy?
Look, it would be easy to dismiss the past year as chaos, Glenn. Partisan, politics, but for them,
yeah,
dignity isn't something you're born with, but something you measure by your net worth, your celebrity, your headlines, your crowd size.
Wow.
Oh, because the Democrats have never played any identity politics when it comes to celebrity. They didn't have the first celebrity president or anything. That's not how they promoted Barack Obama with his giant rallies or anything like that. No, no, this is all new. This is only only Donald Trump, a brand new thing for Republicans. Right.
So what else did he talk about?
Look, they're turning American life into a zero-sum game, Glenn, where in order to win, another must lose. Mm-hmm. Where we can guarantee America's safety if we slash our safety net.
Mm-hmm.
Coal miners or single moms.
You know, can I just ask a question? Is it like Jeffy even watched this, or is he just quoting everything?
It does sort of feel like potentially Jeffy. He certainly is. I can say this.
Yeah.
He definitely saw the video of it. I'm sensing from as we talk to him, I'm getting he definitely.
So
saw
I didn't
the video
see the video of it. So
we choose an economy strong enough to boast record stock prices and brave enough to admit the top CEOs making 300 times the average worker is not right, Glenn.
Right,
you know that.
Right,
and I'd just like to say to all the dreamers, let me be clear.
Look in the camera when you say that, will you?
Just like to say to all
this camera over
this
here,
camera
yeah.
here.
Yeah,
I'd like to just say to all the dreamers.
No, he did not.
Oh, you want to talk about pandering.
No, he did not.
He actually went to, so you're saying this is amazing. He actually broke into the Spanish to pander even more to the dreamers, which again, we already found out in the Trump part of the speech that saying that Americans can be dreamers too was incredibly offensive. And now apparently so offensive that they had to double pander to the Hispanic audience by actually breaking into. I do have to point out
that last night. I mean, I saw a little bit of it this morning. I didn't watch the whole thing, but it was like Joe Kennedy had a chapstick accident. Did you notice that, Jeffy? Do you think people?
No, I don't think anybody noticed. I think everybody heard the words that he said about proudly marching together, thousands deep in the streets of Vegas, Philadelphia, Nashville.
Right.
I think they all heard that. They paid. I mean, looks, that's you're not supposed to pay attention to that.
Well, I didn't.
It seems like when people quote Joe Kennedy's words, they tend to have a little bit I don't know if I would call it an accident. But they seem to have an issue with chapstick when they quote his words.
Jeffy, did you see any of that?
I did not. I mean, look, politicians can be cheered for the promises they make. Our country will be judged by the promises we keep.
Okay. All right, Jeffy, thank you so much. It's been great to have you.
You build a wall, we'll tear it down.
I'll say this. I wouldn't normally recommend people view a Jeffy segment instead of just listening, but...
This is thank you for the update. I
you're welcome.
That.
Happy to do
very
it.
Very good.
Happy
thank
to do
you,
it.
Joe Kennedy.
Now, if you think that you may have missed some of that, we just gave you the information, so we fulfilled our obligation here. But there might have been a little mocking going on visually.
Right, possibly.
Visually, a little bit of mocking. And
you look great, though, Jeffy. You look great.
So seriously, the chapstick thing, what happened? It just started spreading all over his face until it was like in clumps.
It did seem to get actually worse.
It did. At first I thought, is he like drooling? Is it spittle? What? Did it?
No one heard a word he said.
No. No.
The entire country just...
That is what happens. When something... Because this happened once to Ted Cruz. Remember this? During one of the debates, he had a little bit of spittle on his lip. And he was having a great... debate at the time, and then
that little white spittle,
and that was it.
Yeah, you remember what was his name?
Bobby Jindal.
Bobby Jindal. He had a drink of water.
No, that was Marco Rubio.
Yeah. Oh, that was Marco Rubio.
Right. Jindal was sweating and stumbling, and oh man.
Yeah, that's right. That was right.
Not that I remember.
I minimized the Bobby Jindal. Thank you, Jeffy. I appreciate it. Hey, by the way, what did you think of this? Did you watch the speech?
I did.
What'd you think?
I thought it was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, he pulled it off. He stayed strong, focused through it. He, you know, he slowed down a little bit.
I thought that was the best speech I've ever heard him give.
You know, one person called last night. We were broadcasting it on Blaze Radio Network, and they reminded us that it was, you know, pretty humble for Trump. I mean, there wasn't a lot of eyes. It was all about the country. Yeah. It was all about us. I mean, it was pretty strong.
He hit exactly the right tone.
And if you're, you know, they're... Look, if you're for a job, I mean, the African caucus, the African-American caucus gave him
nothing. They looked like radicals.
The other Democrats of the other caucuses gave him nothing. It was terrible.
I'm not saying I'm having a difficult time taking you seriously right now, but there's a little, there's a small part of me that's having...
It's really funny because I can talk to him like this. I've never taken him seriously, so it doesn't change.
Wait.
Thanks, Jeffy. I appreciate it.
It was awesome. Sorry.
Yeah, there was.
he goes all in on that stuff, man. Yeah, Jeffy's the man.
We have about 6 inches of Vaseline on his face now.
Very similar to Joe Kennedy.
Oil prices are going up from the amount of Vaseline used in the last few minutes.
That's one we got to put that on Facebook and Twitter today.
Good stuff.
You'll need to see that one. We also have a bunch of audio we need to get to at some point from the actual speech.
Let's go through some of it now. Tonight at 5 o'clock, we are going to go through a few things. One, were you? Am I alone in the way I felt? I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved this speech. I was blown away by it. I thought it was the best speech he's ever given. I think it's one of the best speeches politically I've heard in a long time. He hit Barack Obama. I think Barack Obama will feel like he hit him in the face for 45 minutes. But that wasn't his intent. It was just the opposite of Barack Obama.
Yeah, so much more effective than, you know, calling Barack Obama a name or saying he was a disaster.
There was nothing of that.
It was just
a repudiation
of
everything he did. And it was amazingly satisfying. He got into spending, which is, you know, over $2 trillion of spending, which I am absolutely not for. However... what was amazing to me was the Democrats. They were given everything they say they want. I mean, the only thing he didn't say was, and you know what? Free universal education. I mean, it was...
And they wouldn't have clapped for that either.
And they wouldn't have clapped.
Nope.
It made them look so radical, I think, to the average person. 46% of Democrats thought this was a really good speech, approved of it.
Yeah, 43, I believe it 43. Was. But that's incredibly high for something
him,
like this. For Trump, especially.
Trump, oh, my gosh.
97% of Republicans. But the overall was 75% approval for a speech like
that's
is incredibly high.
That's big. For this guy, that's huge.
It's really big for anybody, though.
Yes.
I mean, even the highly praised by the media Barack Obama speeches didn't have 75% approval ratings typically.
So I really liked the speech all the way through. I liked the way he handled it. And I can praise him. Not for the policies, but for what he was trying to do and reaching out to the left, but they wanted no part of it. It was remarkable. But am I the only one, because I haven't heard anybody else say this today, I was really freaked out by the war thing.
Yeah, you brought that up, and I know you were going to go over this today at 5 p.m., really dissecting it, because...
It's kind of like new war and classic war. You don't want classic war coming back.
No.
Like new Coke, classic Coke. Yeah. Yeah, let's stay with the new war, and I'm going to compare, because this is not the same. This is not what people my age have lived through. If we go to war with North Korea, it'll probably be much more like World War II. Don't want to do it. And it's really concerning. You didn't pick up that vibe.
You know, I mean, I was not surprised to see him hit North Korea. Obviously, it's been a big topic. And it was right after the ISIS section, so it felt like there was a natural flow to it. I mean, you know, if you think about it, I didn't pick it up at the time, but as you laid out the case, and I know you're going to do that again at 5 tonight on The Blaze, not only did he focus on it, he used very, I think, precise language.
Precise.
And then he illustrated it emotionally with multiple guests to show you how bad North Korea really is.
Yep. I mean, it's one thing to do the guy on the crutches. because that was emotional, mm-hmm. and it was really powerful. And if you're my age, it reminds you of the Cold War. And he was sending a message to the people who lived through the Cold War. This hasn't stopped. This evil is still here. And then with the family of, you know, the Warmbier family, whose son went over, was arrested on a stupid charge of taking something off of a bulletin board that he wanted to keep as a souvenir. They charged him as an enemy of the state. They tortured him for a year, dumped his body over here in the United States, and he died a few days later. That one, quite honestly, that is act of war stuff.
Yeah.
And the way it was presented last night was, look, here's the evil, and here's what they did to us. It was, I'm hoping that
powerful.
It is posturing for North Korea, but it is also, historically speaking, that feels like laying the foundation of, we're going for these guys. We're going for war.
You felt like it was like an Axis of Evil type of case, right? Like he's laying out.
Yeah,
exactly.
Not even an Axis of Evil. This is an evil empire. Mm. It was Reagan's evil empire speech, which I support. And I support what Donald Trump did. You know, I've always said I want a president with a twitchy eye, which means I want somebody that the foes don't know, this guy could do it. The problem is Donald Trump has like two twitchy eyes and like a twitchy leg. I think he has restless leg syndrome too. So nobody knows exactly what he's going to do. So it makes me a little nervous if he's just doing this to scare North Korea, which is the case I'm going to lay out tonight. That's good. And he does that really well. But there is also a chance that we are preparing for war. And I'm going to also lay out the case tonight. That is an entirely different thing than the wars we have seen in the last 30 or 40 years. Let me tell you about Simply Safe. Simply Safe is just an amazing company that now builds these great wireless security systems for your home. And they protect over 2 million homes right now. I've seen them in businesses. I've seen them in homes. I have one myself, Simply Safe. This system has been amazing from the beginning, but it's now completely rebuilt and redesigned. They've added new safeguards to protect against power outages and down Wi-Fi and cut landlines, bats, hammers. They've tested everything. The all-new Simply Safe, redesigned to be practically invisible with really powerful sensors, really small. Nobody's going to notice them until they open a door they shouldn't, or open a window they shouldn't, or break glass. What's really remarkable is they've spent years building this system. They've added so much, but you still get the same fair and honest price. 24/7 protection is only $15 a month. You own the system and there is no contract, so you can cancel at any time. It's smaller, it's smarter, it's faster, it's stronger. Supply is also limited. I want you to go and check this out online and see how much money you will save. It's remarkable. SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Have you read anywhere about the congressman that walked out on the speech last night? I mean, do you remember the hoopla around Joe Wilson when he said, "You lie"? And as it turns out, a couple of years later, it's true. He did lie. But you remember how you don't treat the president of the United States this way? How about the first lady? Did anybody notice that the Democrats sat on their hands for the first lady? I mean, it's not like, you know, and you shouldn't do this with anyone, but I mean, Hillary Clinton, you could say, became partisan because she got involved in healthcare and everything else. Melania Trump is an innocent bystander here. I don't think she wanted to. She didn't aspire to be first lady. She's the first lady. Can you treat her with respect? You can't even applaud her? That's really just despicable. The Democrats last night, at least in my view, blew it. if I may quote the president, bigly. Last night, if you were a Democrat and you heard the first part of the speech, and I don't mean like a crazy, I'm out in the street marching every, I just mean a regular person. You know, you're just, you don't vote for the Republicans, but, you know, and you heard that Donald Trump last night, who sounded reasoned and reasonable, you may not have liked the first 45 minutes because maybe your politics. But when he started in on the gravy train of, hey, I've got four pillars on reform for our borders, and the first one is DACA and a path to citizenship, not securing the border, path to citizenship.
And beyond DACA. I mean, that's, remember, DACA is not a path to citizenship. Right. It's just legal status.
Right.
This is actually going beyond DACA.
When you heard that, when you heard that there was the lowest unemployment rating for the for African Americans, and the camera went on the Black caucus, and they all were sitting on their hands. Mm. You realized these guys are not in touch with me at all. These are radicals. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, keep going. You are destroying middle American Democrats.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
If I had access to the Oval Office today, I would walk in and say, Mr. President, you know exactly who I am and how I feel about you. Wow. That was one of the best speeches I think a president has given in a long time. I'd like to work with you on the teleprompter thing just a little bit. And I really want to kiss the feet of the writer of this. It was really good. It connected. 70% of it is something that I've waited to hear for a long time, and it was delivered well for him. 30%. The first pillar is a path to citizenship, not the border security. I want you to hear what he said last night in case you missed it.
The first pillar of our framework generously offers a path to citizenship for 1.8 million illegal immigrants who were brought here by their parents at a young age. That covers almost three times more people than the previous administration covered. Under our plan, those who meet education and work requirements and show good moral character will be able to become full citizens of the United States over a 12-year period. The second pillar fully secures the border. That means building a great wall on the southern border, and it means hiring more heroes like CJ to keep our communities safe. Crucially, our plan closes the terrible loopholes exploited by criminals and terrorists to enter our country. And it finally ends the horrible and dangerous practice of catch and release. The third pillar ends the visa lottery, a program that randomly hands out green cards without any regard for skill, merit, or the safety of American people. It's time to begin moving toward a merit-based immigration system, one that admits people who are skilled, who want to work, who will contribute to our society, and who will love and respect our country. The fourth and final pillar protects the nuclear family by ending chain migration.
Okay. So you notice his eyes went right over to the left when he said citizenship. That was a surprise for them. That should have taken them, they should have stood up. Mm-hmm. If their principle really was trying to get this passed, they should have stood up and cheered because no other Republican would have ever suggested that has the support of the right. No. Can you imagine? Imagine if Ted Cruz would have said that, Marco Rubio. Imagine what talk radio would be saying today. Imagine that.
We don't have to imagine it. I mean, they did say those things.
Right. So now, today, you have a president who is still being supported. You have your little gift in exchange for what we want. Nobody's ever suggested this before, and you sat on your hands? Unbelievable. Pat Gray is joining us.
They sat on their hands for, we need to put America first. They didn't clap. They didn't get up. They didn't do anything. I want to put America first from now on. And they're like, oh, I don't want America first. I can't go along with anything more than 33rd. I'm not America first. No.
We worked hard in getting us, 24th in math.
How can you not applaud for America first? What is the downside of that? It looked really bad.
It's actually your responsibility, really, right? As a representative, yes, there's a little bit of connotation with that, yes, phrase going back historically.
I'm going to give them the benefit that I shouldn't. They don't deserve it. Mm-hmm. It's not what I think the majority were thinking. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on America first. But it falls apart quickly.
Yeah, I'm not going to, because look at what they, I mean, you gave them the path to citizenship, which, yeah, you've been yelling about for, yeah, years and years and years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't like that either. Well, what is it you want?
They didn't stand
up.
The Black Caucus did not even clap when he said
low unemployment for blacks,
the lowest, mm-hmm, in recorded history.
Yeah.
That is quite an accomplishment. I don't care who made it. That's good news.
Not to them.
I know.
It was remarkable.
Principles, mm-hmm, remarkable. Is a great thing to focus on here, because you're right. If their principle was to actually help out people who are on DACA, help out dreamers, help out people who want to become citizens. I mean, go back in history. What have Republicans been beaten up on and lost their potential politically for? Much less than this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, none of them suggested what Trump suggested last time.
If Jeb Bush would have won the presidency, A, it would have been even a weirder parallel universe. But if he would have won the presidency, let me tell you this, man. If he gave that part of that speech at the State of the Union last night, if it was Jeb Bush, oh my gosh, it would be there might be riots in the streets with Republicans.
And this is why it's so clear they don't care about these immigrants at all. The left does not care about them. If they cared about them, they could take advantage of this. Trump is giving a legitimate attempt at saying, look, I understand you guys want this done. I want the border wall done. I want a couple of changes to tighten up the immigration system. I will give you your side of this. I'll just give it to you.
You give us our side.
And you give us at least part of what,
yeah,
we want.
Yeah.
And they won't even engage.
And here's what's amazing. The strategic error in that was remarkable. Just remarkable. Think of the power they would have had if they would have gone on. This speech has a 70% approval rating.
75, yeah.
75. Mm-hmm. If they would have got up last night on just the first one, mm-hmm, just the first one.
Yep.
You don't have to stand up for all three pillars, just the first one. And then been on today and said, well, I have a problem with the first, the second, third, and fourth pillar, but we can get that at the negotiating table. It was, it was great of the president to give us this. You then at least have the illusion of fairness, and I'm willing to work together. You want to talk about a do-nothing Congress? This is a sit-on-your-hands Congress. This is a I'm-not-even-showing-up Congress.
Pat, how do you balance the two sides of this speech, which, if you define it this way, one, presentation, a positive vision of America, a lot of legitimate accomplishments, some real success and results, and balance that against some policy prescriptions for the future, including $2 trillion and mass amnesty and citizenship and, family leave care and infrastructure. And I mean, do you just take this as a positive moment of the presidency, or do you worry about what he's suggesting?
No, I'm worried about what he's suggesting. This has been the problem with this president from the beginning is, he's not a true conservative. So during the first year, we were actually pleasantly surprised that most of his policies seemed to be. The things he got done were pretty much conservative. But now, in year two, he's starting to show you the rest of his agenda, which includes all the things you mentioned. And that's what we were afraid of in the beginning. And that's why I wasn't a huge Trump supporter from the start. But for Democrats not to come along on this, they could have big wins right now.
Yeah.
They could have huge wins.
They are so hurting them.
He is like-minded with them on many issues. Yeah. And for them to just discount all of that because of their sheer unadulterated hatred for the man, really bad politically, I think.
I have a percolating theory here on the best way to get conservative things out of the Trump White House.
Mm.
And it's, I don't know that I necessarily have proved this out yet, but I think there's a theory here. There's something here, which is part one, Donald Trump suggests something liberal. This is how you get conservative stuff out of the White House. Part one, Donald Trump announces he wants to do something that's liberal. Part two, the Democrats, being the awful human beings that they are in most cases that are in Congress, no matter what he said, even if it's something really liberal that they're supposed to like, they treat him like he's Hitler.
Yeah.
And so in response from being treated like he was Hitler, he gets so pissed off, he goes the opposite direction and gets something really conservative done.
That could actually happen.
I mean, it's not an implied, it's happened. I feel like with some of these things where there's been this trial balloon of something liberal, liberals react like maniacs. And then on the other side, he's like, you know what? You're not getting any of that. In fact, we're going 20 steps the other direction.
Yeah, I thought it was an important moment when his eyes shifted. His eyes shifted over to the left and or his right, and he looked over at the Democrats and he looked on the word
amnesty.
Path to citizenship.
Yes. Yeah.
Path to citizenship. They might have expected, I'll give you DACA. And he looked over like, try this one on for size.
Yeah.
I'm giving a path to citizenship. And he looked over
to
them.
He sure did.
That was I believe that Donald Trump is the kind of guy who he does not offer candy and flowers very often. He is a stick guy, not a sugar guy. He offered sugar last night and they rejected him and quite honestly acted wildly inappropriate on the things they should have loved. He usually doesn't go for sugar a second time. He usually goes for a stick. And and honestly, Democrats, you are blowing it because you could get these things. I know, good. You could get these things and B, you could look like you're working together. You are going to go down as a party that is out of step with about 40% of your base. You know, they keep saying, well, you know, Donald Trump only has 37% support of, you know, the country. Well, how much? What is the support with conservatives? About 70?
Yeah, 70 or 80.
Okay, 70 or 80. So Donald Trump is out of step with about 20% of conservatives. 43% last night said that was a really good speech of Democrats.
Mm.
You are out of step with more of your base than he is out of step with. That's pretty remarkable. You better wake up, because the Democrat in the middle of the country doesn't hate God, doesn't hate the country, you know, is not for all of this, you know, 93 gender crap. They're not there. That's not who they are. And they're not going there.
And then the Democrats have the nerve to trot out a Kennedy for the rebuttal.
Oh, my gosh. Kennedy whose grandson.
The grandson of.
The secretary of his grandfather was Mary Jo Kopechne.
So it was weird that we had Chapstick Acquittic last night. I called police.
That is the line of the day.
I called police right away. I didn't wait 10 hours. He's drowning in Chapstick. Please, help him. Help him now.
Thank you, Pat.
Don't forget these cookies, Pat, because I'll eat all of them, please. Yeah. I'll eat this one, too. But Pat Gray is coming up on Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV networks. Please subscribe, check it out. And you can also get it via the podcast on iTunes and anywhere else you get them. Chapstick Acquittic.
That's the best. All right. It's common knowledge. You go to pay. You're going to pay interest. You go to a bank. You're going to pay interest when you're borrowing money. Did you know there are ways to pay off mortgage interest sooner? You can pay your loan off. You make biweekly payments or an extra payment every year, and things change. You're not paying on that interest. You're going right to principal. A lot of options are available that can save you anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a month. And part of that is just refinancing. It'll take 10 minutes to call the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing, and they're going to customize a plan that makes sense for you with no upfront fees, no obligation to make a change. If you have an adjustable mortgage, please either renew it so you have another 5 years, or you lock those rates in. Please do that now, because the rates are going to go up, and I am afraid they're going to go way up, and that will cost you. People will lose their house because they won't be able to afford the monthly payment just because of the interest rates going up, and it's coming, I think, sooner than you think. American Financing, they work for you. They don't work for the bank. They work for you. 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. American Financing, straightforward, effortless mortgage experiences that you can have right now. American Financing, 800-906-2440 or AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
A couple of things, one more important than the other. The audacity of Melania Trump to wear white in January last night.
How dare. Where's the coverage on this?
Where's the coverage on this? I mean, Vanity Fair has got to get on this. somebody's got to get on this quickly. But there is some bad news today. A GOP retreat was happening.
Yeah.
And all of the representatives got onto a train. Not all of them, but many of them got onto a train. The train struck a garbage truck. No word on why the garbage truck was there, how that accident happened, but several people were hurt.
No official word on injuries yet, though it seems like there's several representatives that were on the train that have tweeted they're okay, you know, but there are some injuries. It does look like the truck did not make out well in that battle, which tends usually to happen in a train versus truck battle.
The train usually wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some pictures of the truck, and there is a lot of garbage all over the place.
And not a lot of truck?
Not a lot of truck.
Is there any clue as to why the garbage truck is? Is there a possibility that,
there's something other than just a truck made a big mistake.
Yeah.
Nothing I've seen suggested yet. It doesn't seem like it was anything. Although it's obviously, something you want to look into whenever any of these things happen. But it doesn't seem to be anything so far, at least, that would lead you to believe anything other than a bad accident. And they're treating apparently the driver of the truck.
He lived?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you treat them and hope that he's still alive at some level.
You're not treating them if they're dead.
Yeah, but you are going to do everything you can, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, I will say it's probably a representative's word from 100 yards away, so they're not going to know the fact.
Holy cow.
But still, it's a...
Prayers for everybody
and
their families.
Scary. It's scary, especially with last year of GOP.
That's why I thought of it. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of that, before the shooting last year over the summer. Great show. You don't want to miss tonight, 5 o'clock, only on theblaze.com/TV.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.